cutting through an overload of information to get to the heart of the story. This is The Point.
What flows in the veins of the world's oldest living civilization? Welcome to a special edition of Global Thinkers with me, Liu Xin, jointly brought to you by CGTN, Renmin University of China, and the city of Nanping in southern China's Fujian province. Today, we are in the picturesque Mount Wuyi, a special place in the formation of Chinese civilization. Here, the 12th century scholar Zhu Xi spent 50 years and developed New Confucianism. He also became known as a sage second only to Confucius. His ideas not only soaked through the Chinese, but also traveled to other parts of Asia. So while China stresses a Chinese approach to modernization, it's perhaps necessary to find out more about this ancient figure and his ideas. Exactly who is Zhu Xi? How have his ideas shaped the Chinese? And what does it mean to you? To explore these answers, I'm pleased to be joined by four distinguished guests. They are Professor Yang Huiling, Professor at the School of Liberal Arts of Renmin University of China, formerly a Vice President of the University. Tamara Prusik, Research Fellow at the School of Philosophy of Monash University in Australia. Professor Javier Garcia, a senior international journalist before, but now a professor at the School of Journalism and Communication at Renmin University in China. And last but not least, Professor Roland Boer at the School of Philosophy of Renmin University of China. We also have teachers and students from Wuyi University, a leading institution in research into New Confucianism. The warmest welcome to all of our special guests and to all of our audience members. Thank you very much. So, my dear guests, we just had a sip of tea or two of the famous black tea here in Wuyi Mountain, which is a UNESCO cultural heritage site, one of the very famous spots here in China. What is your impression of sipping tea here in Wuyi? Professor Yang, let's start with you.
Thank you. I think, of course, Wuyi is quite famous for the high quality of Chinese tea. And even Zhu Xi himself could be taken as an expert in tasting tea. He even used tea as an analogy to express some of his thoughts.
So it's very philosophical to sip tea.
For instance, like he said, sugar is sweet. But anyway, too much sugar will let you taste a little bit sour. But tea is a little bit bitter. But after a while, you will know what does a sweet means. That is what expressed in one of the Zhu Xi's books.
Tamara, if you don't mind, I'm calling you Tamara. Is it the first time you're here in Mount Wuyi? And
yes.
How is the experience so far? How would you describe it?
Well, you know, this is my first experience of these strange Chinese mountains, which are, well, strange from my perspective. I grew up in a country where all the mountains have these very sharp peaks. Here, they're rounded.
Yeah.
And the second thing that really strikes me, I was in Weishan, where we are, in the hotel down in the town, and I was in a shop trying to buy something. Of course, I don't speak Chinese, so I had a bit of trouble explaining what I want. I was really surprised by how people jumped in to help me spontaneously without any, you know, there was one woman, then another one who knew English, so she spent about half an hour willingly helping me. So that's my first impression about Wuyi, or at least the region, but I think that's the case for whole China, that people are very spontaneous and very hospitable. So that's my impression of.
Yeah. Professor Garcia, your first time in Wuyi as well? Do you have similar?
Yes, my first time in Wuyi, I was already in other parts of Fujian province, but not in the mountains, and it's really amazing here. I didn't have so much time yet to know very well in deep the region, but the landscape is really amazing. The steep slopes and the flat tops, these kind of mountains, a little bit karstic that I know from other parts in China, like Wuling, are really incredible for me. And yeah, now the green of the spring, and so one can feel here the biodiversity really in this region. Mm.
It's a lot of tea, but not so much coffee. Are you craving?
Yeah, I like very much tea, and the tea here is wonderful. But coffee, I need it in the morning overall.
Okay. Professor Boa, are you craving for coffee too, or?
Well, actually, no, because I brought some Yunnan coffee with me, and I grind the beans in the morning.
Very smart.
And have my coffee first thing, so I don't need any coffee now. With tea, and call me Roland, by the way, that's fine. With tea, the thing that comes up for me is conversation. It's when, and especially with the Chinese style of having tea, with someone there with the leaves in a sort of major, a bigger pot, and then the small cups, porcelain cups, you feel like sipping and talking and slowing down and taking time to discuss things. And that's the association, conversation.
Yes.
Conversation is what comes with tea drinking, and that's what happened this morning.
Yes.
So that's, for me, the impression, the experience.
Indeed, indeed. So let's imagine that we are having tea here, although we don't physically have it, but it is like, you know, chat over tea and talk about this place and the person that made it so famous and so important for the Chinese culture. This is a very beautiful setting, and it's actually the first time that we produce a show from such a setting. It's touching. I don't know how you feel about it. It touches me. Yeah. You know, the structure of it, and we are surrounded by history, by culture, and by ideas which are very profound. So we talked about this person, Zhu Xi. Professor Yang, you are an expert in Chinese culture and ideas. So how important is this person? Because we all heard about Confucius, and there's this portrait of Confucius right behind us, which is world famous. But how important is Scholar Zhu?
Yeah, actually, as what you mentioned just now, of the new Confucianism, after Song Dynasty, about 11 and 12 centuries, even earlier, then the English word tea could be used in the West.
Okay.
In accordance with Webster English Dictionary.
How about this place? How about Mr. Zhu?
Yeah. And traditionally, I think Chinese intellectuals will follow Confucius as the most important master of Confucianist tradition. But after Song Dynasty, Zhu Xi could be another representative of the new Confucianism. I think briefly, traditional Confucianism might be a little bit lacking in metaphysics. But after that, everything has been changed.
Mm.
Together with the different resources like the Buddhism and Taoism and the Book of Changes and other things. That is the main elements of new Confucianism, I think.
So Zhu Xi gave it depth, how would you describe it? If you're going to use three key words that the layman use.
Yes, yes. Yeah, it's quite challenging.
No such words as metaphysics. Because I will be the first one who gets lost.
Yeah. Actually, I could try to make it as brief as possible.
Three key words? Okay.
The first phrase, if you like to mention about the key terms in New Confucian, must be Li Yi Fen Shu. That means there's one...
In English, please.
There's one principle out of the many appearances. Or briefly, just like what you could find in the U.S. dollars, in 10, there's a proverb in Latin. There is the one out of the many. I think that could be used as one...
Say it again. I didn't get it.
There is the one out of the many.
There is one.
There is the one out of the many.
Out of the many.
Yeah, in Zhu Xi's words, that means you could finally find the single one as a basic principle out of the many appearances.
All right.
He make the moon like a special case.
Yeah, please.
He said the moon reflects in lakes and rivers everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, all the reflections came from one moon. So that is in Chinese, Yue Ying Wan Chuan. Yeah.
That's very picturesque, poetic, and philosophical. But how does it apply to, you know, everyday life, to our personality? Roland, I'm going to throw this question to you because you speak very good Chinese. You study Chinese culture for a long time. What is your understanding of such in different forms, the one? I don't know how to even to summarize that.
What you find with Juxi is that it's a comprehensive system of thought. That's what Juxi is able to provide in developing, drawing on the earlier strands, but developing a full system of thought. And I'm quite struck by the core category, or the one, if you like, of reason. Of reason, I called it heavenly reason, but reason. This is really, really important later on. We can talk more about it later. So, system of thought and the importance of reason.
Yeah, maybe something I'm not an expert at all, far away from these two eminence. But what I know a little bit from Tuzi, he focused more on how things interacted with each other. When you compare with Tomás de Aquino, Aquinas in English, Tomás de Aquino, Italian, who was contemporary to Tuzi, he focused on the substance, how things are, and tried to explain with theories how things were. And Tuzi was more how things interacted with each other. The experience was much more important for him, the experience. And this difference is key, I think, to understand the difference between Chinese thought and Western thought. Because Western thought was based on theories, on speculations, on abstractions, and Chinese thought was based on experience, on practical things, how things were useful for the people, for the reality. That is the main difference, I think.
Well, if I can follow on from that, okay, I mentioned the question of reason, but why reason? It was actually often seen as an early type of political philosophy. Juxi wanted to make practical contributions and proposals, and often quite critical of the Song court. So all of this, what seems like abstract thinking, is actually very practical. What is better for the people? What is better to reform the system to improve the lives of people, and so on? So it's that's behind it.
And can I add, I mean, what I little know about him is that he kind of blended dialectics and inclusivity. So there is this inherent dialectical thought in him. So, and that probably comes from looking at experience and how things develop, because everything is in process. So nothing is stationary. And then he also had this thought about people being embedded in nature. So they were not in Western thought. There is this distinction between humans and nature. Humans are given dominion, as the Bible says, right, over nature. That's not the case in China. And in my speech yesterday, I was actually making a comparison between how Chinese gardens blend nature and human and culture seamlessly. You can't really, nothing is forced. The nature is not forced into human categories or cultural categories, while the human and the cultural also is not forced into natural, you know, organizations. So I think he kind of blended those things together, and that stayed with China, and I think today China is also like that. It is dialectical and inclusive, includes the nature, includes others.
So for the people who don't understand philosophy, dialectics, you know, it's a very...
two opposites, two different sort of positions, two opposites, and then you explore the relationship between them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And dialectics is a process of both and. It's an either or, but it becomes both and.
Yeah.
So they relate in complex ways with one another. So in this case, it's the complex relations between human beings and our natural environment.
Yeah, absolutely. Professor Yang?
Holistic.
Yeah, right?
Were they
add
good?
One thing.
Did they grasp the essence?
I'm not so sure. Actually, I think none of us are really expert in the study of Juxi. But anyway, in accordance with another scholar passed away, many years, Feng Youlan, he published a short book in English in the year of 1948. And he described the Juxi as the school of Platonic idea in China, actually. That is Feng Youlan's evaluation about Juxi. And on the other hand, I think in accordance with your question, a dialectic. I think normally a Chinese philosophy would be taken as the expression of the logic of both end. And in the West, the typical case is either or.
Yes. That's correct.
Anyway,
yes.
For Chinese is
both end.
End. For
both
the West
end.
Is
or. Either
or.
Either or. Either or, just both ends.
So, am I correct to say, sorry to interrupt, that we have this Taoist tradition where things are constantly moving, developing. When you go to the other extreme, you actually come back to where you started. Is that how this, how the Chinese thoughts is very much accommodative to the dialectic tradition in the Western philosophy?
The typical logic for the Western philosophy is identity. Either or, and finally means identity.
Dichotomies.
What
dichotomies?
Both
individualities.
End, both end means a completely different logic. That is the logic of correlation.
Okay.
Everything could be preconditioned and by another thing, opposite to this.
Is this unique for the Chinese? I mean, why would such an environment 800 years ago produce a school of thought that is in this particular shape? Is there something special about Chinese, I don't know, genes or our society, our geography, the food that we eat, that make us see the world this way?
Very That's a very hard question.
And you want one word answer, don't you?
Yeah.
You want one word answer. I think
one sentence is also okay.
One sentence is okay. To my mind, I put it in terms of yin-yang. You think of the diagram of yin-yang and the way it relates to one another. And my understanding is, correct me if I'm wrong, that this originally comes from Taoism but then is incorporated within the whole of Chinese thought. That diagram embodies so much about the cultural assumptions, what we've been talking about, the dialectic, etc.
So if I could explain it more, that yin-yang is, of course, is the basic archetype of Chinese philosophy, or Chinese dialectic. That means that nothing is ultimate, nothing is single. So from positive and negative, two opposite things, we could find something mixed together. That is the ultimate authority in Chinese philosophy.
Is such tradition still very strong in Chinese culture, in Chinese identity? I mean, in the modern-day Chinese, the Chinese political philosophy, our governance, is such a theory still very relevant?
I would say yes. Very much
still
so.
Still very much so.
Very much so.
Yeah.
It's in every...
Despite all the modern things
exactly.
We have.
It's a whole mindset, a cultural framework. It's in assumptions about food, in assumptions about what's appropriate for the seasons. It's just so striking. And this, for me, is the big cultural shock. It's the way these things relate to one another and all aspects.
Would you give a more concrete example or case when you talk about food or the seasons? You know, how striking? What were you stricken by, for instance, when you...
Well, give a personal example. When I went to see a doctor of traditional Chinese medicine, and I had some problems, and I was assessed in the usual way with people are familiar, take my pulse, check my tongue, ask me questions, and so on and so forth. And then the determination was that there was an imbalance of a heat and cold in my body. I had too much heat, and I needed, you know, to restore that relationship. And I was given the medicines to take for a few weeks, and it worked. Yeah. It dealt with the problem.
But that's a very interesting, so still very much relevant?
Very much part
of the assumption. Okay, Professor Garcia, you're interacting with young students, you teach in classes, and you live in Beijing as well. What is your observation? Do you think what is embodied here in the Confucianism or New Confucianism or traditional Chinese, is it still very much relevant in the society we're seeing today?
Yes, I think Confucianism, Neo-Confucianism, and even Taoism is still very present in Chinese society and Chinese characteristics, as of the characteristics of the people. So it's really inside the people, no? Not only in the politics and in the way of acting, but also in the way of life and to think of the people. They have not this logic that we have, which comes from this dissection of the reality in boxes, you know? That is what the Western people does normally. The Chinese think in unities, in images. It's different. They are not so rational, not so logic. It's more a unity with the nature, and also a unity of thinking. And so they don't have this kind of logic. And then for us, sometimes it's really difficult to understand how they react or answer us.
I disagree with that.
You disagree with him?
I do disagree with that. I understand what you're saying, but I think to say it's sort of logical reason instead of images, I don't think is a correct distinction.
Images. Okay.
Because, I mean, Zhu Xi, as we sort of talked about earlier, had a core category of his thought was, in fact, reason, heavenly reason, as playing
it's
a role.
It's Chinese in logic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So, but I would call it not logic. I don't know how you can call it.
I agree actually with Javier, sorry to say. I think that the Western conception of reason is quite different to Chinese conception of reason.
Yeah.
Chinese conception of reason is more wholesome. It's more unifying everything rather than separating into categories. And unfortunately, that comes from Plato, the initial, then the second offender was Aristotle, then you have, you know, taken up by the Western philosophy, Thomas Aquinas developed Aristotle to an nth level, which was not really good for Western philosophy. And then you have more and more development into that categorization of things. While Chinese do understand that there are differences between things, but there are also similarities between them. Yeah. I don't live in China, I don't have experience of China. But what I know theoretically from what, for example, read about, the last thing I read was President Xi's speech about the Global Civilizations Initiative. You see that type of thinking included in that speech. There is a recognition that we are all different, different cultures, different civilizations, but we do belong to one, how would you say, family. Right? We do belong to one unified family. So I think reason is very different in Western thought.
No, even the language. When I say images, I was thinking in the language, because your characters are images, right?
Right.
And this is makes a different thinking, because you think in characters, not in words, ideas, logical ideas, like the West. There's also a difference that makes difficult communication sometimes, right?
Yeah. Roland, I
disagree again.
Sorry.
It is true, the Chinese characters are like little pictures, little symbols, some of them, not all, and it developed. Why do you shake your head?
Well, I might ask my colleague and mentor, Professor Young, to correct me on this one, but my understanding from specialists in it is that the oldest characters that go back are ideographs, kind of stylized images, but 75% is actually phonetic.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually phonetic. And so there is a logic and a reason to it. And one of the attractions about learning to read and write the characters is precisely to figure out the logic that's there. And sometimes it's so logical, I think, now what would this word be? And then I thought, well, of course, that's purely logical. It's not something different from what I was doing. So,
well, but
it's,
I don't.
It's not a Western logic.
I can leave the stage.
I have a favorite character. I don't know Chinese, but there is. I know few characters. Let's put it that way. There is one character. Chinese character, my favorite. It's Zhenzi.
Which one?
Zhenzi. Yeah. Benevolence.
Benevolence. Okay.
That's
okay.
My favorite character. Why is it favorite character? Because it has the sign for man, for human.
Yeah.
Zhen.
Right.
I'm probably pronouncing it wrongly.
You're pronouncing it right. It's good, yeah.
But then there are those two lines next to it.
Yeah.
Right. So it's benevolence is a relationship between two.
Okay,
there is a goodwill that goes between two. So there is always two, right? There is always relation.
Professor Yang, is this a romanticized Rendish interpretation? Because Ren is everywhere. Ren is actually such an important word for the Chinese. So it's Confucianism is all about Ren. So what is Ren and why is it written this way? Was it originally written this way?
Yeah, actually, that means two persons. Basically, two persons working together. That is Ren, benevolence. But another typical word is Shu. Shu is a kernel thing.
Because
forgiveness, pardon.
Ah, okay. Yeah,
but anyway, in English translation, one of the best translation is not nothing to do with pardon or forgiveness, but reciprocity. Reciprocity. Mm.
That's so it's about two people.
Yeah, and a community, not only two, maybe many people. So Zhu Xi has a very good explanation about the reciprocity. Mm-hmm. That is Tui Ji Ji Ren. Yeah, that means
don't do to others what you don't wish yourself.
Like that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so that is a principle.
Is that also embodied in the character Ren as well?
Of course.
Because when you're dealing with each other, you are not supposed to impose.
Yeah. Linguistically, of course.
Okay.
Yeah. And Shu, the interesting thing is that Shu, traditionally, originally, the two parts just make to remind you
Ru
the pronunciation Ru and Xin.
Yeah.
But after that, after the translation, it could be gradually explained as a comparison with you and others. Oh. You harden and other harden.
That's
a new explanation. Very
fascinating. Yeah. Let's pause it there for a moment. A lot of food for thought, and we have come to the end of the first part of our discussion. Many thanks to my guests. They have been Professor Yang Huiling, former Vice President of Renmin University of China, Tamara Prozig, Research Fellow at the School of Philosophy of Monash University in Australia, Javier Garcia, Professor at the School of Journalism and Communication of Renmin University of China, and Roland Boer, Professor at the School of Philosophy of Renmin University of China. And with that, we come to the end of part one of this special edition of Global Thinkers, coming to you from the beautiful Mount Wuyi in southern China. Thank you very much. And of course, a big round of applause to our audience members from Wuyi University, a local institution specialized in studying new Confucianism. Thank you very much. Thank you. And of course, many thanks to our audience members for having followed us on this special edition. As always, you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter using the handle Lu Xin in Beijing. You've got the point.